Hey, welcome back to the Out of Spec podcast. We have with us Tom Malogny, and I, of course, joined by Kyle. And Tom runs the State of Charge YouTube channel. You may have seen him on the Inside EVs podcast as well. And it's his birthday as of recording this. So happy birthday, Tom. And thank you for joining us on this, special guest episode of the Out of Spec podcast. We love to bring on other people in the industry and talk about A, what you do, but also some of your background. Maybe, you may have constant viewers and listeners of your own stuff, but they don't always know where you even come from or where it started. And some people love the origin stories. So I was wondering if we could maybe start with a brief overview of where did you come from? And Kyle's mentioned to me that some history with pizza, and how has that become State of Charge?
It's an interesting journey that I've taken to get to where I am today. And I'm kind of one of the OGs back in the day when electric vehicles really weren't out there. But I noticed you guys had John Volker on recently, and he's definitely an OG. I owned a restaurant in New Jersey for I started it when I was in college, actually. It was a really successful restaurant. And I was always interested in alternative fuel vehicles, compressed natural gas, hydrogen, electric, like anything that was alternative fuel. And I think the initial driving force was not environmental reasons. It was to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. And that was kind of like something that was always like a splinter that, always bothered me. Every time I filled up, it was like, some of this money's going to places that, aren't really friendly to the US and hate us and maybe even tried to kill us at one point, back in the early, down in the 2001. I mean, some of the money that funded that terrible terrorist attack was oil money. I mean, that's been proven. And I think that was the driving force for me. And I just started doing research, and there was nothing available. You're talking 2004, 2005, 2006. There was nothing out there. I even almost bought this one company was making this this big. It looked like a port-a-john. Okay, imagine a big plastic port-a-john, and you could make your own ethanol on your ha at your house, and it was like a gas pump. And I was going to buy this thing and put it in my driveway and make my own fuel. And you had to buy pallets of sugar. Sugar was the feedstock for this thing. And so I was actually going to buy this thing, and it looked just like a port-a-john, a big plastic thing the size of that. You filled the back with sugar, and like every 3 or 4 days it would fill a tank of gas. And that never came to fruition. The company never actually made it. But I actually filled out an application online. I found this application in late 2007 or 2008, and it said, "Do you want to drive an electric car?" And it was BMW had these applications out because they were going to do a pilot program with these electric Mini Coopers that were called the Mini E. So I was actually at work in my office, and I saw this. I'm, this is interesting. Yeah, I'd like to do this. And it was $900, $850 a month lease for a Mini Cooper. At the time, you could lease one for $199 a month with no money down. And I was paying $850 a month for a year to lease this electric Mini Cooper. So I filled out the application. There's a really cool story about that. It was an online application. It took like 45 minutes to fill out. There was like dozens of questions. And at the very end, the screen goes blank. And then like 5 seconds later, it comes up and said, "Oops. There was a problem, processing your application. We're very sorry. You have to start over." So I sat there and I looked at the screen, and this is important for me to explain this to you guys. And I'm staring at the screen, and I'm like, "Do I want to do that again? That 45 friggin' minutes of questions, and I'm getting angry, but I'm saying, yeah, you know what? I really think I want to do this." So I click restart, start over again. And as soon as I click start over again, it says, "Congratulations. Your application's been processed. There was no problem. We just wanted to," and there were two options, "close this out or fill out the application again." It said, "We just wanted to make sure that we don't allow anybody in the program who doesn't have patience, because there's going to be problems with, you're going to be a beta tester on brand new technology, and there's going to be problems, and you have to be patient if there's problems." So the fact that I sat there and thought about it, guys, and I clicked, do it over. And the reason why I'm emphasizing this is that was a pivotal point in my life.
Wow.
Now, you know, I literally, you know, that was the T in the road, and I took a left, and it took me to where I am today.
That's insane. What? Well, yeah. First of all, BMW typically isn't usually that charismatic, and they're very by the book. That's really interesting that they put this little trick in their application.
Yeah, and you know, I think it was run by the Mini people, but because it was a Mini, you know, so.
Well, then the Mini people make sense.
Exactly. Yeah, that's so many, you know what I mean? And but when you think about it, and I tell people, you know, when, you know, what in life in general, you have to pay attention to even small decisions you make, because you don't know where that decision is going to take you, you know, 10, 15 years down the road. If I would have closed out of that, I would have never gotten my first electric car. And who knows the path of my, I might still be a restaurateur, you know, and you know, who knows, because that led to me getting the Mini E. I loved it so much, I put solar on my roof. I started a blog. I started talking about living with an electric car. And then things just snowballed. I started writing for John Volker, Green Car Reports, for PluginCars.com. Inside EVs came later, and things just snowballed. And then at one point, I just, you know, sat down with my wife one day and said, I want to sell the restaurant and I want to do electric cars full time. Well, what you want to do? Well, there's a lot of things I can do. I can consult, I can write, I can make videos. I don't know, but I want to be in this industry. And, you know, give my wife credit. I sold the restaurant, which was a very lucrative, you know, steady paycheck. And I went into a field where I had no idea if I was ever going to really make enough money to, you know, even come close to what I made when I owned the restaurant. Now, luckily, things have worked out. And, you know, I have a lot of different coals on the fires, and I do some consulting, and I, you know, I train dealers how to sell electric cars. I'm a senior editor at Inside EVs. Now I got this YouTube thing going, which I never really thought I was going to do, and it's starting to take off. I'm closing in on 30,000 subscribers in almost 2 years now. So, you know, things are working out, but that's how I got to this, Jordan. It was really an interesting, you know, path to get me here.
That's fascinating. And it's cool to see, you know, you kind of made a name for yourself, especially in talking about charging systems and home chargers. I mean, that's where I've heard your name thrown around a lot. And I had to throw it around yesterday to my friend. He's going to buy an EV6 in Green Bay. He found a dealer that would not do a markup. And he started looking on forums and, you know, just the basic Google search. And he's like, what do I do for a home? He's never had an EV. He's never driven an EV, which... That nowadays, that's still somewhat commonplace. I think we're working towards that realm where people are like, oh yeah, I've been in a Tesla. Like they all associate to it in some way. But it's interesting to see how much learning there still is to be done. And he's a pretty techie guy, but it's just his tech focus. He works for OtterBox. Like it's all cell phones and stuff. He'd never thought about electric cars. So that's a cool way to see the origin of that. And it's just the, you know, the home application. I mean, your passion for it led you to get solar, right?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you talk about the, you know, people needing information on charging stations. Well, I like educating. And it's one of the reasons why I decided to do the dealership training. I've worked with over 300 dealers in the U.S. at this point now. And I visited close to 1,000 dealerships in like 8 different states. And I enjoy educating people on electric vehicles. It's part of one of the reasons why I've gravitated towards home charging equipment, because it's one of the biggest questions and decisions people have to make once they decide that they're going to get an electric car. Once they get an electric car, now what do I do? And, you know, I like the aspect of educating people on the difference. And there's a lot of differences in home charging equipment. A lot of people just, you know, some people just say, I just wanted to charge the car. That's fine. Go out and buy whatever you want. But there's so many different differences and nuances from product to product. Some are good for outdoor use. Some are better for indoor. You know, some, you know, have adjustable power. Some can power share. Some cables are better than others. And I love getting into the nitty gritty of explaining the difference so people can then make an educated decision. And that's why I have so many of these reviews on my YouTube channel. And I'm going to be launching actually this month. I have a new website called evchargingstations.com, and I'm going to be bringing all my videos, my reviews on there, and have links to purchase them and things like that. But I will say one thing that I'm really had to be mad. Kyle, I don't know if I mentioned this to you yet. Somebody ripped off my reviews. Somebody took all my video reviews of charging stations and started a website to sell charging stations with my reviews.
Really?
So, yeah. So I just had to hire an attorney, and we're going after them now. I think they're based in China. So it makes it very difficult to get people to, you know, like, because you can't really threaten to sue them or anything like that. They're, you know, I can't sue them. But my attorneys send the cease and desist letters and doing all that stuff. And they basically took all my video reviews and they translated them into written. So what I spoke on my video is written in on their reviews. And they have all the stuff, how they have the best EV charging station reviews on the internet. I don't even want to give out the name because I don't want people giving them the clicks, but it's a website dedicated just to selling electric car charging stations. And they're using all my reviews.
That's crazy. That's really insane.
Yeah. What are you going to do? I'll go after them. We're going to contact Amazon because they have Amazon referral links, and we're going to contact their domain, the domain provider, and all that stuff. And you know, we'll you know, the bottom line is I'll get it taken down, but it's going to cost me a few $1,000s to do this. And it's like, really, I got to pay this money? Just, but you have to protect your content.
Yeah. So, I mean, from my side, I definitely want to talk about the early days of EVs, Mini E, what that was like. Then you had i3, of course. That's how I met you back when I was a kid. I knew you with your i3 when you first got your first one. But let's
talk a little more about, in the middle.
And Active E was in the middle. That's right. Yeah. But let's talk about charging stations just a little bit more, because to me, and I would consider myself more than knowledgeable than your average EV user, you know, EVSE or supply equipment at home has always been a very secondary thought. Did the car come 1450 plus or, you know, cheapest thing on Amazon? But your reviews have really opened up my world to different things. And one of the things I think is most interesting that I never thought of was your cable deep freeze stiffness test. And this is where you try and wrap the cable, you elongate the cable, wrap it back up. These charging reviews sometimes are an hour long. I mean, they're really in depth. And I love that because I can put it on and I don't have to find another thing to watch after 10 minutes. I can really learn everything about this one component. And how did you come up with your testing criteria for something no one has ever tested before? Because with cars, it's easy. Range. Everyone's been doing range tests. We just do it better. Everyone's been doing acceleration tests. We just do it better. But no one has ever done charging station tests. So how'd you come up with these?
So being that I've been involved with electric vehicles since the beginning, since, you know, I got my first electric car in 2009. So, you know, I've had years of talking to other early adopters about challenges with charging. You know, and some of the people that I've talked to that had Volts, a couple of people that I could come to mind that had Chevy Volts in 2010, they installed their chargers outside their house and they used to complain all the time. They're like, in the morning, the thing is just a frozen rope. I unplug the car and the whole cable just comes in one piece. I can't even bend it. So I'm like, yeah, well, like, you know, that's really important for people that live in cold weather climates. The cable needs to remain pliable. It needs to be bendable no matter how cold it is. And we can do this. It's not hard. You know, it's, you know, there's rubbers and things that can be rubber jackets rather than cheap plastic jackets that you could do. So that's why I started doing that. Now I just started two new tests where I'm dropping the connectors 5 times on the concrete floor. And then also I just bought a micrometer and I'm going to be measuring the thickness of the cables too and talking about that, because I always compare cables, but I don't tell people the exact thickness, but I'm going to start doing that in my reviews too, so they know exactly how thick all the cables are.
That's cool. And yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's hard for people to tell sometimes on video, especially with home charging stations, because to a lot of people, they all look the same. But I'm sure there's a lot that goes into that, especially with like certification levels. Like, you know, I come from an Apple background and had to talk to people a lot that came into Apple saying, hey, my computer started smoking. Like, what's the deal? And they showed me their charger they bought from eBay from China for $3. And I was like, there's no certification at all on this thing. It doesn't even say where it's made or anything. It's just like, and I could feel, you can like feel the weight difference. There's just like components missing from some of the knockoffs. What do you see as far as people saying, hey, I need something cheap and just easy?
Yeah. And that's unfortunate. That's the case. It's like the Amazon world now. People go on Amazon and they'll search electric car chargers, right? And there'll be a whole list of them. There's so many of them. And The thing is that if you're new to electric cars, you're new to the brands. Like, you don't know what NLX is or ChargePoint or, you know, United Chargers, you know. So to you, the name of an established electric vehicle charging station brand is no different than the name of a brand that just originated 2 months ago in China. You know, in a factory in China, they just came up with this new name. And that's what happens. We're getting flooded with low quality equipment from China. Now, there's some good quality equipment come from there too. It depends on how it's being built. But the, you know, you see these really cheap EVSC, you know, $199 for a 40 amp plug-in unit. And I can tell you right now, that thing's going to burn out. If you use it frequently, it's going to burn out in like 2 years. And I get into, I won't say arguments, but every now and then, when I go on a tirade talking about, like, don't buy stuff that isn't safety certified, either ETL or UL, buy quality equipment. You know what? Spend $50 more. The thing will last 10 years. You're saving $50 and it burns out 2 years. So I'll be talking to people on then. They'll be like, don't tell me that. I bought this one brand called Must Start, and I call it Must Melt. And you know, great. So people buy them and they're like, don't tell me, I've had it for 8 months. The thing works great. And then 2 months later, I'll get a private message. You know, you were right. I came out this morning and the plug's all melted. And, you know, God, I could have had a fire. And that's one of the things you have to understand, guys. You're saving a few bucks. People charge their cars for many hours every day. And when do you charge? At night. When you are sleeping. When, like, the worst time that you could possibly have a fire or a problem in your house. And you know what? For $50 more, you know, you're putting your family's lives at risk. Don't buy cheap, not safety certified equipment. And here's another way to look at if it's built well or not. If it doesn't have a 3-year warranty, it's probably junk. Because if the company doesn't back it with a good warranty, then they're telling you right there, this won't last 3 years. So there's some electric car chargers out there with 90-day warranties. So, you know, just don't buy that stuff. Buy something, do some research. Buy a good quality piece of equipment and it'll last you a long time.
Yeah, you know, they say get what you pay for. And it's not like going to IKEA or a cheaper place and being like, oh, get a cheap table and then replace it sooner. Mm-hmm. That's not the different, yeah, different levels of safety involved. I did want to ask really quick, is there any crossover from what you learned as a restaurateur into your job now? Because that's genuinely like a switch in direction as far as occupation. And I'm always curious with people who make these crazy switches, which I think a lot of people make them and are very happy. Like, you seem pretty happy with your life now. But did you see much crossover, or like, did things carry over, or do you miss that a lot?
So, you know, I miss dealing with the people. I like interacting with people, and it was good owning the restaurant. I was a very busy restaurant, hundreds of people a day. I had friends. I knew all the local police officers and firemen and all that stuff. So that sense of community was really cool that I had. I don't miss running a restaurant. That was, you know, it's a tough biz, and I did it for a long time, almost 30 years. And so, you know, I don't miss running a restaurant, but you know, you ask, you know, is there anything you could bring over? And one thing that I'll say, you know, to you guys, and it's funny, we talked about this earlier, the listeners don't know, it was before we came on. These two guys' ages added up aren't as old as I am today. So it's close, but so I've been around for a little bit longer. And one of the things I learned was, if you don't take something from every job you've done, if you aren't able to learn and then bring that to your next endeavor, even if it's a completely different endeavor, then you're not doing a good job. You're not paying attention. You're not learning, and you should always be learning. So, you know, as owning a restaurant and starting it at such a young age, I was in college. I was 19 years old when I started a restaurant. I had, you know, a staff of people that were all older than me working for me. And one thing that I learned was listen to people. That's really important. And I know it's easy to say, oh yeah, I listen to people. Well, no, you don't. Most people don't. Really listen to the people that you're talking to, and then you'll get a better understanding of where they're coming from, and you can work together better. And that matters if you're working at a restaurant, or if I'm training a dealer, a salesperson, you know, or if I'm, you know, talking to people about electric car charging, or even, you know, when I'm on these press drives and talking to the representatives from the companies, you know, yet you try to absorb what the other person across the table is really telling you, and you'll have a better understanding of where they're coming from, and then you'll be able to do a better job working with them. And so that's what I'll tell you. You know, I learned a lot about managing people, about having people working for me, about, you know, not being reactionary. You know, it's the easiest thing is when, you know, an employee does something wrong or breaks a flagrant rule is to jump on them and be like, you're fired, or, you know, yell at them. But, you know, that's really not the best way to handle it. You need to, you know, take it down a notch, be calm, talk things through. And that's always the best way. And that can translate to any job that you do, Jordan.
Well, you've done a really good job explaining what it's like to work for Out of Spec. So, Tom, we've been friends for a long time. It's fun to have you on the podcast. I know a lot of your background. Can we talk about Mini E, Active E, the early BMW days? Because let's just talk about BMW for a second. BMW was arguably the ones pushing for electric mobility, or at least electric mobility research, almost harder than anyone. They had really good pilot programs. They had a really good car with the i3 in terms of an engineering standpoint, and then they let it all go. And only up until now are we seeing finally the next electric car after 8 years, 9 years, something like that, from the i3. Yeah. So how did BMW get so into EVs? Why did they stop? And why are they back?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I know a lot about this. I applied to be in the Mini E program. I was accepted. You had to live in either New York or New Jersey or California. It was the pilot program. There's about 500 cars in the US. It was only on the coasts. And I was lucky that I was in an area that was supported the program. So I got the Mini E, and
You were right down the street from Woodcliff Lake from the headquarters.
Exactly. That's that. And I didn't know that when I filled out the application. I mean, I could have been sitting in Colorado filling out the application, but I mean, it would have filtered you out. You had to live in a certain area. So, you know, I got the car, and I started blogging about it. And I never thought I would blog, but it just seemed like the right thing to do. I wanted to tell people these electric cars are freaking awesome. Like, we should be driving them. And BMW noticed that people were reading my blogs. I started to get some press. I was in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, some of the major publications about this guy's driving an electric car. Even though there were other people driving the car, I got a lot of attention because I was blogging about it. I was very vocal. I didn't mind going and speaking my mind and talking about it. So BMW then kind of, I was like an unofficial brand ambassador, and they would take me to all these events all around the world. And I flew me to Germany. I met board directors and all this stuff. And so it gave me a real look behind the curtain of what was going on at BMW. I used to go up to Woodcliff Lake all the time, Kyle, with the program managers, with the techs. Like, if there was a problem with my Mini E, and those things always broke down. It was like a Frankenstein car put together with parts from, you know, all different places. BMW had some of it. AC Propulsion had the drive, you know, so it was assembled really quickly. So I got to meet all the technicians. I got to know everybody at BMW. And then after the Mini E program was done, BMW made the Active E, which is a one series electric, like a 135, that they converted to fully electric. And I was the first person to get an Active E. There was a big handover ceremony because at that time I was really, you know, very deeply involved in BMW's program. Big handover. The president of BMW handed me the keys.
Was the Active E only U.S. market, or was it a global program?
No, it was global. It was global.
And they made the first one.
They made 1,100 of them. Yeah, wow. And so they made double the amount of they made the Mini E's, and I got the very first one. So I am the very first. This will never change. Retail customer to take possession of an electric BMW. So that's not going away.
Legend among us.
Yeah. Well, you were in the welt. I was walking around the museum once, and I just looked on the wall. I'm like, well, there's Tom on the wall.
They had this whole section on e-mobility, and they had this section carved out of just me because I did documentaries with BMW. If you ever look up online, it's called The $1 Billion Car. I'm in a full hour-long documentary on the electric on BMW's electric vehicle efforts. I did a whole bunch of these series of it was like a documentary series also. And there were some really cool people in it, like Melissa Meyer from Yahoo, Buzz Aldrin. They had some really cool people. And I had like an episode where I was talking about my experience with electric cars and
the future. I remember watching that in period.
Yeah.
Before I ever met you, being like, this is really cool.
Yeah, it was a really cool series. So, and this goes to Kyle talking about, you know, how BMW get ahead. So back in, I think around 2006, BMW had this focus group called Project I, and they put a whole bunch of people together, like thought leaders, not just automotive people. They rented this office, I think like in New York City, and they put a whole bunch of people together and said, tell us what the future of mobility is going to be. We want to know. And so after months of like, you know, this team working on this all together, you know, they came out and said, you know, electric, connected, sustainable, all the stuff and everything. So BMW at that point said, okay, we need to make an electric car. What's the easiest way to do it? Well, we can get these Mini Cooper gliders, from the factory and put to get cobbled together an electric powertrain. Let's get them on the road really quickly, and then we'll get feedback from the participants. And that's another reason why BMW included me in everything. I used to like write reports and send them to BMW, and like the board of directors used to send me handwritten letters back. I was in BMW's, I think, 2011 annual report. You know how all companies send out an annual report? It's like 200 pages thick. In the middle, it might even have been the middle when you open it up, there were three pages with just me in their annual report. It was so cool about talking about the future of electric. So, you know, so they're on this path now. They said, okay, we're going to make our first car in 2014. It's going to be a city car. It's called the Mega City Car. And we're learning with the Mini E and then the Active E. The Active E actually had all the components in it that was going to go in the i3. All the stuff that went in the Mini E was just third party cobbled together. They didn't use anything from that car in future
cars. What charger was in the Mini E? Like plug, because this is before J1772.
Before J1772, yeah, it was a plug made by ODU. I have one in my garage still. It was just this round plug. It almost looked a little bit like the initial Roadster plug, but it's not. It's different. And there was all kind of certification issues with that, which I don't want to get into, but it led to a delay in the Mini E program because BMW couldn't get the charging stations certified by local. When we were installing these electric car charging stations in our garages, the local inspectors were failing them. They were failing everyone's because they were like you're not going to fuel your car in a garage. You know what I mean? And BMW had to put the charging station together because there really weren't any charging stations. So they hired Clipper Creek at the time to provide the box. But then they got the cable from ODU and the whole thing wasn't UL certified. The cable was and the box was. But once you put it together, it wasn't. So it led to all these delays, and some people even left the program because they couldn't charge their car. And I mean, that's early days problems, you know. And
so you got to do a review on that.
Yeah, I wish I still had my original charger. It was a Clipper Creek charger. After that program, the charging station, I took the cable off. I still have the cable, and I put on a cable with a J1772 to repurpose it. So, you know, but I still have that, the original ODU connector. It was pretty cool. So then it went to the Active E. That was a 2.5-year program, led to the i3. So what happened was BMW had plans on just accelerating after the i3 and i8. I mean, there was going to be an i5, you know, an i7, all this stuff. But now fast forward to about 2015, about a year after the i3 came out, there was a change in leadership at BMW. Rutherford stepped down, who was very pro electric vehicle. God, what was his name? I can't remember. Begins with an H. Harold Krueger. Krueger took over.
Krueger.
I'm sorry. So from what I gathered from my insiders at BMW and people that had left the company, there was tremendous pressure on Krueger to backpedal on electrification. As soon as he took over, there was like sides on the board of directors and within the company. And people pressured him and said, you know, because it's all political. You know, these board of directors, it's, you know, I'll vote with you or for you, you know, but I want things from you. And literally, it came down to a few people going to Kroger and telling them, look, you're going to backpedal on electrification, or you're going to be a lame duck CEO. We're not going to give you any support. We're not, you know, and they were feeling pressure from the investors, because don't, you have to understand, billions of dollars were being poured into BMWi, the carbon fiber, all that stuff. I mean, BMW went way out on a limb, and the investors were getting anxious. They were spending billions. The cars weren't selling well, you know, and so they pulled back, and they basically kicked the can down the road for one generation. A generation of cars is about five, life cycle is about 5 years. So instead of getting the cars in 2016, 2017, Kyle, the next generation after the i3, when did we get them? 2022, 2023. And that's exactly what happened. And when that decision was made to backstep, all the program directors from BMWi quit. They all left. Henrik Wanders, Karsten Breitfeld, Dr. Krantz, Uli Krantz, they all left and went. And now they're still in e-mobility. They're all over the place. Wanders is leading Audi's electrification. Karsten Breitfeld's the CEO of Faraday Future. Dr. Krantz, he went and started Canoe, but he left Canoe now, and he works at either Google or Apple. I forget, one of those in their like secret electric vehicle programs. So that's what happened. That's how they lost their edge. They got cold feet because they were pouring money into it and they weren't seeing the results. And they said, let's kick the can down the road. Just one generation. We'll focus on plug-in hybrids, because in 2022, 2023, that's when the market's going to be ripe.
And well, they're not totally wrong, because now we're ready for EVs and everyone's excited. The problem is with BMW now, I think, is, you know, they have to explain the shift. They've been saying for the last 5 years now that we're going to make one chassis that's combustion, hybrid, mild hybrid, plug-in hybrid, hydrogen, and battery electric. And now they're saying, oh, now the future is ground up chassis EVs like the iX, but then also we have the i4, which is still this modular thing. Mm-hmm. So they we're in sort of like the turbulence of their decisions, because everything's a little bit out of place. But I will say, you and I have both driven i4 and iX now. Awesome cars, really good.
They drive great. I was shocked with the i4. I really was expecting it to disappoint me, because, you know, it's on this variable platform that supports, like as you said, everything. And somehow they pulled it off, Kyle. The thing drives great. But I'm going to tell one more thing. You said that they went from the modular platform to saying, oh, now it needs a dedicated platform. It's worse than that. In 2010, 2011, they were the most vocal group saying it has to be a dedicated platform. So they went from saying that to saying, no, we can do it modularly. And now they're saying, no, it's got to be dedicated. So, you know, they flip-flop three times now, not just twice. And that's one of the things that when I saw their new modular platform, they announced it at the LA Auto Show, I want to say 2015, my jaw dropped. I remember looking up at the screen as they did their announcements, and it's saying our new platforms group, it's going to support this, this, and this. And I was just saying to myself, what is going on here? You know, and, you know, it is, you know, it is what it is. And they came back to it. They knew all along you needed to have a dedicated platform, but they can't say that on one hand and make the platforms modular on the other. So, you know, but they found their way. They're coming back.
Yeah. So do you think they took the right approach waiting, or do you think they should have launched these cars the prior generation?
So I don't think it's a terrible idea to wait, but they shouldn't have gone 7 years without a new electric car. And you know what happened in those 7 years? Model 3 ate their lunch. 3 Series sales are getting crushed by Model 3. So here's
Imagine explaining that to someone at BMW 10 years ago.
Yeah, here's what I would have done. And I certainly don't want to run an auto company. Don't think I'm qualified to. But if they were going to do anything between late 2013 when they released the i3 and i8 and 2022 now, maybe in 2015 or 2016, they could have put out an i4 type of a vehicle, a Model 3 long range sports sedan. And that would have been enough, just one vehicle. They didn't have to come out with a bunch of them, but it would have been enough to show what they can do. And maybe it would have taken the edge off the beating they're taking from Tesla. And they are taking a beating from Tesla,
I think, more than almost anyone else.
I agree 100%.
Model 3 is identical to the 3 Series buyer profile, I would say, in general. A little bit tech focused, a little performance focused. You want a nice car, medium sized sedan. You'd always buy a 3 Series. 100%. And now you always buy a Model 3. And you and I have both bought 2 Model 3s. And, you know, here we are. I used to drive a 3 Series and I switched to a Model 3.
I have a friend of mine who's probably bought 5, not bought, he leases, takes like 2-year leases, probably 5 M3s. Okay. Yeah. And 2 summers ago, I was at a party. It was actually his brother's daughter's graduation, and I'm friends with the whole family. And I had just gotten my first Model 3. And he's like, you know, can we go for a ride? I was like, yeah, of course. I could hop in, drive the thing. And he takes it, and I could just see, you know, he's stepping on it, he's backing off, stepping on it, you're getting thrown back in the seat, and he's getting hooked, and he's getting hooked. And then we get out of it, and I'm like, so what'd you think? He's like, it's freaking incredible. He goes, I never would have thought it was going to be that. He kind of seemed stunned. So this was in like June or July. His lease was up in September on his Model 3, M3, and he was going to go get another one. So in July or August, it's like 2 months before his lease is up, he buys a Model 3 performance, gets a Model 3 performance. He's hooked. He calls me up. He goes, you did it to me. He goes, I just ordered a Model 3 performance. He goes, I can't stop thinking about it since I drove it with you. So he doesn't need 2 cars. He doesn't have enough room in his driveway. So he goes and he returns the Model 3, the M3, 2 months early to the dealership, in which he knows the people because he goes every 2 years, gets a new one. And he's like, you know, I'm bringing it back. And they're like, you know, oh, you know, your lease isn't up yet. And he's like, yeah, I don't have room in the driveway. He goes, I just bought a Tesla. And they're like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be renting it anymore. And he goes, you know, let me talk to the sales manager. So he talks to the sales manager, who he never really liked. He liked his salesmen, not really the sales manager. They're always the bad guys, you know? And he just goes to him. He goes, dude, I just want to tell you, you're effed, you know, but he said the whole thing. And the guy's like, what? He goes, drive a Tesla Model 3 performance and you'll know what I'm talking about. He goes, you're effed. He goes, have a good day. And he left.
Okay. So, this only happens in New Jersey, by the way. No, that's amazing. And it's so true, though. The Model 3 truly disrupted 3 Series sales. I mean, also, there's been the rise of the SUV. So X3 has taken some of those sales. But now Model Y is stealing X3's thunder. I don't know. I just feel like BMW was hurt the most by Tesla in terms of market share in their target audience. And it's a big wake-up call for the Germans. It's scary for the Germans too, because 1 in 3 Germans work in the auto industry, and there's so much passion and brand loyalty behind these giant companies, whether it's Daimler or Volkswagen Group or BMW. And, you know, even spending time in Europe recently, we were just in Munich, which is BMW's home, for almost a month. There are 1 million Teslas around, and that's like a big middle finger. If your own home country is rolling in Teslas, it's pretty wild. Oh, you're muted there, Tom.
Wait till Giga Berlin opens up and the trucks are just shipping them things everywhere. You know, it's going to be that much more painful. You know, it really is.
You know, you and I do a podcast every week called the Inside EVs Podcast with 2 awesome co-hosts. It's a really good show. We get really into the nitty gritty, but I think we've seen a lot of people responding to you and I personally, because I think you and I share a very similar viewpoint on the cars themselves, actually. And a lot of people will either say, you guys are Tesla haters, or we're Tesla fanboys. But in reality, I think we're kind of down the middle, especially when compared with most other people reviewing cars. What would you say to that?
100%. I think you and I are right down the middle. And the funny thing is, the people that love Tesla view us as Tesla haters. And the people that don't like Tesla view us as Tesla fanboys, because they're way out here. You know, we're here. So their perspective of us is to the left or to the right. So, you know, we are Tesla fanboys and Tesla haters, depending on where you're standing. And, you know, I get that on Twitter all the time. I get blocked by the Tesla Q. I get blocked by, you know, the Tesla, the Tesla hater. Everybody blocks me because of Tesla. And, you know, it's so weird when you get, you see, like, you know, this tweet, you know, this can't be viewed because you've been blocked or whatever. And I'm like, I think I'm like one of the most straight guys there out there, like without being controversial and not taking sides. And, you know, and like for me to see so many people blocking me, I'm like, really? Like, you know, what I want to be able to message them and say, I'm just curious, why did you block me? You know, but you can't do that once they block you, you know?
Well, I think on one hand, look, we are critical of Tesla when they deserve it. Yeah. When they when they release terrible software for their car, when they have quality issues. I mean, your Model 3 had a giant, I could put my hand in the back of your Model 3 when you took delivery of it. Remember that?
The rear hatch was so bad.
So bad.
And when it was lower, it would go like bump, bump, bump.
You were one of the first, you know, power rear tailgate.
Yeah.
And they obviously hadn't had it figured out by then.
No, it wasn't. I got mine was so early that I didn't get the new headlights because it was when they just started, or the hit steering wheel. They when they just started making the 2021s. And how about when I reviewed, I got a Model Y for the range test. It was one of the first Model Ys to come out. And I'm doing the range test and the speaker falls off inside the car, the interior speaker. It's dangling by a wire as I'm driving. I'm like, it's a brand new car.
Right.
And you have to report that. You have.
I don't know why that's an issue to point these things out. They're object, like it's, there's no question. The speaker fell off. That's trash. Why would you do that? But on the other hand, it's like, what other electric car is going to give you the best charging experience in terms of ease of use, the best navigation system to route you through these chargers, and honestly, the best app, the best vertical integration, the best buying experience, in my opinion.
Drive.
Yeah, they drive so well.
That's why I've owned two of them. You know, I could have any electric car out there, you know, within my price range. And, you know, the last two that I've bought are Teslas, you know, but the next two I buy won't be. But
right. So because we're getting close to the end, though, but can we talk about the electric pickup truck craze? And I want your take on this because you need a pickup truck. Genuinely, you have one. Mm-hmm. You're a user. You're going to be putting this thing for snow plowing, for hauling stuff around. I see some major issues with electric pickup trucks, but I also see some major benefits where for fleet use, for vehicles that you know exactly what you're going to do, you will sell every single one you can make and they're perfect. For me and for you as personal use, we might have huge difference in driving range. We might have, you know, different temperature conditions. How are you planning on living with an electric truck?
So yeah, that's a great question. And I think one that a lot of people would be interested in hearing the answer to, because, you know, my take on it is this first range of electric trucks, say the F-150 Lightning, the Rivian, the Silverado when it comes up, I think they're really good, really cool electric vehicles, electric trucks. That said, they will not satisfy, you know, every electric truck owner's needs, flat out, especially, you know, some in middle America, like yourself, you live out in Colorado, very rural, where, you know, you could easily just drive a couple hundred miles in a day to pick up a few things. That's not the case here in New Jersey. You know, you've lived in this area. Everything's pretty close. Very rarely do I ever need to go more than 100 miles. So, you know, I think people have to evaluate their own use case for it. And it's not going to work for a lot of people. Now, the Rivian I put in a different box because they're telling you this isn't a work truck. Don't buy this if you need to, you know, haul lumber and tow a trailer, you know, because, you know, for a job site in Texas and you're in Oklahoma, they're telling you don't do this. Ford's not really saying that. Ford's saying, you know, yeah, this can, you know, it's a work truck also. So you have to do a little homework and understand there's going to be a lot of uses that will not be able to be satisfied with this first generation pickup truck. Do I think by the end of this decade, we'll have pickup trucks that will be able to do anything and be able to recharge because the infrastructure will be so much better than it is now? Yeah, I do. I think by the end of this decade, your needs, the needs of the guy who needs to tow a, you know, a 5,000 pound trailer, you know, 500 miles once a month. I think the vehicles will be able to satisfy their needs also. But, you know, this is first gen stuff. And for first gen stuff, as far as I'm concerned, the F-150 Lightning and the Rivian, both of which I've driven, and I've driven the Rivian for about 200 miles. I've driven in the F-150 Lightning. Both of those trucks, I think, are damn good first, efforts for pickup trucks. And they'll satisfy my needs, maybe not yours. You know, we have different driving styles, but that's okay. Because even think about how many pickup trucks. We buy 3 million pickup trucks a year here in the U.S. If 2% of the people that buy them, if it can fit their needs, how many vehicles? That's more than what we'll be able to make this.
Well, that's my point is, and this is why I brought this up, because my needs aren't everybody's needs, and this guy's needs in Wyoming are definitely not my needs. Yeah. And so there are, I think, enough use cases, more than enough use cases, mm-hmm. to sell every single one of these electric trucks with huge wait lists. And Rivian's mm-hmm. proving that right now. They have like a 3-year wait almost if you want one. Now, granted, they're not making that many, but I think Ford's going to pump these things out. I think GM's going to pump these things out. And with that, we'll see them out on the road. I don't know. We're going to see the Silverado EV for the first time at the Chicago Auto Show here in a couple days and ask some GM engineers about it. I'm really excited for the electric truck thing. Personally, I think a Rivian's actually probably the best vehicle I could own for myself. Just does everything I need, probably the SUV, but I kind of like the truck because the camp kitchen. And
which I ordered on mine. I have the camp kitchen.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I have to go. We gotta do a road show. We gotta drive around, do some cookouts, and make a lot, right, Jordan?
We
Rivian across America and do some cool fun with that. You know, I'll have both trucks for a certain period of time too. So we could, figure on doing some kind of cool road trip or something, with both of the trucks.
There's something about having quality material, like with the Rivian camp kitchen, for example. The stuff in the camp kitchen is such good quality. It makes you want to cook. Like this house I just bought, my first time having a gas stove. I was like, I don't cook enough. I have a gas stove now. I need to cook more because it just makes a difference. But I can't wait to like try things out of the Rivian camp kitchen. Of course, me and Kyle had popcorn. To make
pizza in different places. Ooh,
yeah, we're going to have to practice that. That's tough doing on a flat surface with no heat coming from the top. Hmm. You know, I have to figure out how to make the cheese melt, so we'll figure it out.
I got a better idea. We design a pizza oven for the kitchen.
That would rails. You might have something there. People definitely want that.
Well, Jordan and I have been thinking about making some sort of accessories that we sell throughout a spec for Rivian stuff. So we have all this recovery gear that's arriving that we're testing out, sort of have easy off-roading because we're super into off-roading, overlanding kits and things like this. But Rivian, by far, super interesting truck. By the way, we just heard back from them. We should be testing one here in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, awesome.
So I'm really looking forward to this. I just got the email while we were on the call. And awesome. So that's going to be really freaking cool. I have no idea what spec or anything like that. I think to finish it off, Tom, we talk all the time. There's an endless list of stuff that we're doing. Everything I thought we were going to talk about, which was Ioniq 5 testing, we haven't even touched on. So for like a couple minutes, because I know you got to go. Yeah, it's your birthday. We don't want to hold you up. Can we just talk about what you've experienced with your Hyundai testing and we can compare and contrast what we found in the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I did the 70 mile an hour highway range test, and I have the Limited with the 20 inch wheels and the 255, 45 tires. It was a little different than you did on the SEL with the 19 inch. And I pulled, this isn't even out yet. We're talking about it here.
Won't go up for another week almost. It might be out by then.
Yeah. The Inside EVs one's going to go up tomorrow. Crap. I got to write that review. I finished up with only 195 miles, 2.7 miles per kilowatt hour. And it was cold though. I started out in the morning, it was 20 degrees. It got up to 36 or 37 degrees. So this was a real cold weather test. I did DC fast charge it before the range started. So I warmed up the battery the best I could. I had the heat on 68 degrees, fan setting one. One was able to keep me cool because even though it was cold, we had full sun. And with the panoramic glass roof, it was keeping me nice and warm. So I wasn't wasting a lot of, I think, the Ioniq tells you what your energy breakdown was. It was 3% for heating. So that's really not that much. It's about as low as you're going to get. And I think I hit 0% state of charge at like 290, 193 or 194. 193. And I cranked out two more miles when I pulled off the highway. But you know what? I was getting no pedal response. It was just a sponge. And I maybe could have squeezed, eked out another mile because the car.
I don't know. I feel like once it gets really spongy, that car's almost out.
It really is. And I noticed when, and you didn't notice the same thing. We talked about this. After I got down to 5%, man, that car has nothing. It's got nothing in it. And most other EVs that I've tested, at least, it gives you more closer to zero, except Polestar.
Polestar is the worst offender here.
Yeah, the Polestar is the worst. The Polestar, actually, I'm driving along on the highway at 70 miles an hour with like 5% state of charge, and the car starts slowing down.
Yep.
I'm on the highway, and I'm like, I can't get off the highway. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I'm like, put the hazards on, you know, wave out, put your arm out the window, like, pass me, you know? I'm going 40 miles an hour on the New Jersey Turnpike.
They really out every last drop out of XC40 Recharge and Polestar 2 just to get some range out of it. Yeah. They're very inefficient.
Yeah, but I found the Ioniq to be under 5%. I didn't like driving it. I would tell Ioniq 5 owners, you know, think of 5% as zero.
I think I've been analyzing the charging curve, and I should have a video coming out tomorrow after because I've charged this car multiple times, zero to full under different
conditions. And I did it three times.
Yep. And each time it's been different for me. So nothing is consistent. I called Hyundai engineers yesterday, actually, and their PR team, and they spoke to engineers because I sent them a list of questions. And I said, here's what I'm experiencing. Here's what Tom is experiencing. And here's what I've experienced previously. And this car just got a 35-gigabyte software update. And they claim, after talking to one person at Hyundai, that it makes no difference to the battery and thermals and to anything like that. But I find that really hard to believe because our cars are exhibiting such drastic difference in behavior in similar conditions. We're talking 10 to 20 degrees ambient difference, not night and day. I mean, we're seeing where the car disconnects and runs rear-wheel drive in sport mode. And what they were saying, and I haven't driven it because I'm going to spend more time with it, was that at light power loads, it still might just use the rear motor, but it keeps the front motor connected. I'm like, okay, that kind of makes sense. So anyway, basically it's a very thermal dependent car. It's very temperamental to get the best out of it. And it's perfect for the EV nerds because you're always playing the car to get the right stuff here, the right stuff there. It's a mind game. You're driving the car to get the most out of it. I still think cars like a Model 3, like a Mustang Mach-E, like an ID4, are just easier for your general public to maximize the capabilities of the car. I'm not saying they have more capability than the Ioniq 5, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, one sec, Jordan. Talking about the charging curve, mine was very consistent. I did it three times, once 0 to 100, and two times 10 to 80. And it took me exactly 30 minutes to charge from 10 to 80%. Now, it's supposed to be 18 minutes. And the charging session, because I got the report from Electro America, was like 8 seconds different from 10% to 80%.
Did you notice the same?
Exact same. Now,
really?
Exact same. Yeah. And, I start off, it jumps up and then it immediately comes back down and then holds that. And then it went up a little bit and held it for the whole time and then dropped down towards the end. It's a weird curve. It doesn't look like Ioniq curve doesn't look like anything. Any other electric vehicle charging curve that we have?
Yeah, but what's interesting is because it's different. So when I charged EV6 in Europe, which is, I confirmed with the guys, the exact same battery pack in Ioniq 5, it was doing 151 kilowatts at 80%. And this time I could only get 110 kilowatts at 80%, but we saw a peak of 240. And so, or 236, I think we saw a peak of, which is cars rated for 235. On the previous time when I charged Ioniq 5, it was down on the Mexican border for the first drive. And that I saw 240 kilowatt peak and it overheated the battery and then thermal throttled. But I'm like, I know there's more in it up top. Yeah. So with Ioniq 5, I think the best way to drive the car is to plug it in between 10 and 15% state of charge to not give it a huge current load down low. And then just kind of rip it from charger to charger, charge it up to 60, 70%, and then back down to 10 to 15 and keep it in that middle. It's not a car that benefits from going to zero because it can hold such a high charge rate deep in the pack. 151 at 80% is insane.
That's nuts. I didn't get anything near that at 80%.
Yeah.
It tailed way down. by the time it was at 80%. Yeah, I'm actually going to try to put those charts together this weekend and maybe get that video up next week. But yeah, it was consistent, but it was consistently disappointing. And I think it's just what we talked about, the fact that this car is really sensitive to temperature.
Yep.
And, you know, listen, everybody doesn't live in Miami or San Diego. You know, I mean, half this country, the U.S. at least, you know, gets cold in the winter. And, yep. You know, people have to understand that, you know, 10 to 80% in 18 minutes is freaking awesome. But you're not going to get that all the time. We have to communicate that to the people.
Right. And then there's also, like, we should share best practices on how to at least maximize your time. But it is a shame that the car launched in winter and it launched without plug and charge and it launched without on-route battery preconditioning. Two inexcusable items, in my opinion. EQS launched with plug and charge. Mach-E launched with plug and charge a year ago. Yeah. Like, what are they doing over there? They built a great car, but it's not integrated well.
And they're not, I don't think they're doing a good job with the dealers either. The one dealership that I went to talk to about it, they didn't know the car comes with 2 years free charging on Electrify America network.
So like, we have even worse than that. We have a lot of dealers charging over sticker, which Hyundai has no control over.
No, they don't. Yeah.
You know, but also just like our friends, I have some friends that work at a Hyundai dealer in North Carolina. They got like 40 to 80 of them. I don't know the exact number, but
I know. Oh, you know what? You have to tell me the name of that dealership, because the funny thing is I bumped into an old friend today and I had the Ioniq 5 and he was like, the Ioniq 5. He goes, how'd you get that? He goes, I want to buy one. He goes, but all the dealers are charging over MSRP. And I said, a friend of mine tells me there's a dealer in North Carolina that's selling them at sticker. And he's like, please. He goes, he gave me his email. He said, give me the name of that dealership. So
sure. It's Johnson Hyundai. Yeah. I'll send it to you. Johnson Hyundai.
Because I'm going to get it.
They have so many cars with one level two charger.
Yeah.
And so they just got dumped on with these things. And they're like, you know, they're like, we're trying to charge everything. We're driving them over to Electrify America. We're only getting 30 to 50 kilowatt charging because, you know, it's right down the street and it's cold out. So I'm like on the phone with my friends there who's like charging the car. I'm like, you need to drive the piss out of this car on the way to a charger. They have 12 volt batteries dying. So the whole cars are dead. And they thought that they bricked the whole thing. I'm like, no, just jump the 12 volt, then plug in a charger. And then they got some cars back alive. But they're just no dealers equipped to handle this car. There's been zero training.
They have to get ready. You know, there's two dealers. One of the things I do is I advise dealerships on DC fast charging also. And I have a contract with two dealers here in New Jersey that are both installing like a bank of 150 kilowatt DC fast chargers at the dealership. This it's a big dealership group. And in two of their locations, they're spending $500,000 each on upgrading their infrastructure. That's not for the equipment. Like, it's crazy the money.
I don't know how they can justify the ROI on that.
I know. Well, that it's a big dealership group, and they realize that electric is the future. So they're going to have 150 kilowatt DC fast chargers, and then a row of level twos to slow charge the cars. But they're going to let the customers use the DC fast chargers. They want people on their lot charging the car, talking to them about electric vehicles. They want to use this as like a whole, you know, marketing plan.
That's perfect.
You pull off the highway in your Ioniq 5, whatever, and you're there for half an hour. One of them is a Ford dealership, and you're going to walk around. You're looking at Mustang Mach-Es. You know what? Maybe your lease is coming up. Maybe you say, what I get, like to give these guys my business. They let me charge here. This Mach-E looks cool. You know, so dealerships can use this. You know, they have to be innovative, and you know, electrification is gonna really take a sledgehammer to how they have been doing business for 100 years. So they have to get innovative, and maybe charging is one way that they can be innovative. You know, and they have to consider that.
It's kind of brilliant because you know people more and more are starting to plan their charging, and then they don't only plan where the charger is, but what's around it. What can I do? And yeah, if it's at a dealer lot, they can walk around the lot. Maybe they are car people like us, and they're like, oh, what's this interesting thing over here in the corner? Oh, it's for sale. Oh, look at that price. Yeah. So
come in, have a cup of coffee. The dealerships are gonna when they see people charging, like a salesperson is gonna come out and say, do you want to come inside, have a seat, you know, grab it. We have a snack area, get a cup of coffee, have a snack. Like, that's how you build, you know, customer support, you know, is being friendly, you know. Not, I remember the early days of EVs when I used to go to a dealership to plug into their level two, because I had to get home with the Mini or the Activa if it was like a Nissan dealership, because they were like the first ones to put in charging stations at their dealerships. I had like general managers running out and yelling at me, get that thing off my lot. like, you know, so I learned to always ask. But, you know, they missed an opportunity to come out, be, you know, talk to me, you know, talk about your Leaf. You know, maybe I'm going to get a Leaf, you know, so it's the dealerships are going to have to evolve their business model. And I think being Charger friendly is going to help them sell more cars.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Tom, we really appreciate you coming on and taking time out of your birthday and just nerding out with EV and electrification. And I mean, we could obviously talk for hours. We'll have to have you back on. I can't
believe it was an hour. That went fast.
Time flies when you're having fun. But yeah, you know, I'd love to come out to New Jersey sometime and get some proper pizza and stuff. And, you know, I'll have to meet you in person someday.
Well, I have to say I was one of the lucky ones. I got to go to Tom's restaurant before it shut down. And I remember it was great, good food. And yeah, that was a good time.
Nice. Well, yeah. And I want to let everyone know to go follow Tom at Tom Malog on Twitter. And of course, we're at Out of Spec. And, you know, see what we're doing. We're spreading the word. I mean, we've been spreading the word for years. Tom, especially, it's got all the history. And Tom, we'll definitely have to have you back on again sometime soon because there's infinitely more wisdom to share with the world.
Absolutely. You know, just give me a call. I'll jump on anytime. This is a lot of fun. Love talking with people that know electric cars. You know, I'm usually the one talking at people because people are just asking me questions. So it's good to get in a room with, like, you know, and we all just talk about the stuff and it's not me just answering questions, but you guys are a blast. And you know, this is great that you're starting this podcast. So I expect to be a frequent guest over here.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
All right. Well, guys, we'll see everyone next time.